Working together, we can make a change. Working together, we can help better things. Let us put our hate aside and let us let love be our guide. Let's not try little love for change. Let's try little love for change. People disliking one another because we're born of a different color. Maybe I'm protesting the wars across the sea, because there are people here that are still not free. Working together, we can make a change. Working together, we can help better things.
Carol Cox Show, right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. A lovely day here. We got rain and a nice little chill in the air, but very nice today. Beautiful. And I'm going to get right to it. We're going to be discussing a bit about the Honolulu Zoo and the Association of Zoos and Aquarium Accreditation, and some background on that. And there's a number of developments, and we all voted. I say we all, when the majority voted out of the numbers that voted to fund the zoo. And so there's a easy walk from here to wherever with the zoo now, because they got the money. But that's just the start of their woes and in the beginning. And there are so many broken parts at the zoo. It's going to take more than money from me and you. It's going to take some integrity. They're going to have to import about 8,000 pounds of integrity, and then another 10,000 pounds of transparency, and then another, going to have to give people raises and hire qualified people and find someone other than the mayor's friends and colleagues that will run it for the zoo for a month or 2 months. And some interesting things have been presenting themselves regarding the zoo and potentially what's out there in social media is that the mayor knew that Baird Fleming was leaving before the elections. So I don't have any facts to support that, but on social media, it's actually making those claims. So we're going to talk about all of that, and as I told you when we discussed the constitutional amendments, the Honolulu constitutional amendments, it was my recommendation to just let them all sit and dry on the vine, because there's always going to be something behind the scene that they don't tell us. So anyway, I've invited Miss Kathy Gogel with Animal Rights Hawaii to join me, and let's see if she's on line here. Good morning, Kathy. Are you there?
Good morning, Carol. Yes, I am.
How are you?
We're inviting you. I'm well.
Well, what's going on with the... If you would, give us a little bit about yourself. You've been on before, and you're with Animal Rights Hawaii. Give us a little background, and you have concerns with the zoo or insight. We'd like to hear from you and share with us, enlightening us today on this rainy day.
Well, I will do my best, and I've been spending a bit of time researching some of the past history of the zoo, and some things have come to light that I feel need to be brought to the public in interest, because apparently the managing director and the government, the mayor's office, seems to be playing fast and loose with transparency in government, and this is the first time, and I'm just very annoyed about it.
Mm-hmm.
When Baird Fleming gave an interview to Denby Fawcett, who is a long-time, well-known, well-regarded journalist, he, one wouldn't say he lied, he just didn't share all of the truth. He did not tell her that he had already decided to leave the zoo, and I believe from some of the people that I've been talking to from the zoo, that he was told not to mention this, that in fact his hands were tied behind his back for practically everything he wanted to do for the zoo. And I feel very badly about this, because I believe he is a good man and I wish him well in the future. But our zoo is not going anywhere happy. We will be getting some money, and I think a lot of people said yes on that charter amendment because they thought, oh, yes, well, the zoo's in bad shape, so why don't we give them some money? But what I have found is that the problem is much deeper than that. It's systemic. It's systemic in the organization of the city running the Honolulu Zoo.
Mm-hmm.
And if you, if I may explain this, I think part of the problem is the fact that several years ago, the Honolulu Zoo was moved out of the Department of Parks and Recreation and transferred over to the Department of Enterprise Services. Enterprise Services is a money-making department. They run Blaisdell and other venues that are supposed to be a streamline of money into the coffers of the city. People who are familiar with zoos, and particularly municipal zoos, say that to think that a zoo can be self-supporting is ridiculous. Even the San Diego Zoo, which is one of the largest zoos in the country, has support from the government, but the government does not run the zoo. And the problem right now We have downtown enterprise services making decisions. They have no background with animals. They know nothing. They do not rely on the wisdom of the longtime staff there. There have been keepers there for as long as 25 years who know very well how to take care of the animals. And we have then another layer called the Zoological Society. The Zoological Society started way back in the 70s when it was called the Honolulu Zoo Police. And I belonged on that board. I was there for 6 years, including 1 year as president. We funded a lot of exhibits, especially the Golden Lion Tamarin exhibit. And at the end of my term, it was decided to become the Honolulu Zoological Society because that sounded more professional. Nowadays, it has 11 employees, it has 26 board members, and they bring in about $500,000 a year, which is just they're in charge of the membership. Now, what they do with that money, 10% goes to the zoo. The other 90% goes to the salaries and administration of the Zoological Society. Now, this seems like a self-perpetuating job promise for everybody, is once you get in there, you will not ever have to leave. And I don't think that that's the best way to look after the animals at the zoo. And I'm calling for animal rights lawyers, going to call for a thorough examination of Honolulu Zoological Society and what it is doing with all of the money that it is bringing in. They do not even have control over the boutique or the snack bar. Those are contracted out to other companies that are, I understand, doing an okay business. But right now, everything just stinks about the way that the zoo is being run.
Well, the zoo lost its accreditation from the Association of Zoos and Aquariums. Now, I was looking at the AZA's website, and they indicated in the letter where they announced the revocation or rescission of the accreditation that the zoo did have. And that was done March 31st, 2016. And in that letter, they tell them that you can resubmit for accreditation in March of 2017. And I noticed that there's a list of upcoming reviews, accreditation certificate review for March 2017. The Honolulu Zoo is not listed in there. So
I noticed that too.
So that means that as they were saying, well, we may have it by 2018 in another year. Well, apparently, unless there's some rules that I don't know about or there's some special action that can be taken, basically, by missing it this time, this is my understanding, and not being before the board to have it reviewed and seek accreditation, the earliest would be 2018 for submittal. And that, so we might be looking at 2-3 years down the road. Is that an accurate assumption?
I think it would be madness for the city to try to reapply so quickly. I think we won't even have a director in place by then. And from what I have heard, the Zoo Society, talking with the managing director, they want to bring in somebody with a business background. Now, this is absolutely crazy. You have people on your board who have the history and the benefit of education with a variety of different issues very, very frequently with finances, that's good. But the zoo director needs to be an animal person. And that's why this is crazy. The zoo should go back to the Department of Parks and Recreation. Now, I noticed that in 1981, the Zoo Society had banned auctions of animals. This was the ABA. And over the years between 1981, when they really first got themselves well established, to 1993, they revised a lot of their regulations regarding the Species Survival Program. And the Species Survival Program, your listeners who may not know, is a program that allows zoos who have endangered animals to loan their animal to other zoos who need some introduction in their gene pool. Now, because the Honolulu Zoo has lost its accreditation, the SSP situation is definitely in jeopardy. And I would not expect that they would be able to reapply for some time. The zoos are inspected every 5 years. And for the past, say, 20 years, they've been given these sort of, well, this is wrong, but we're giving you a pass, and we'll come back next year and see if it's gotten any better. And this has gone on for quite some time. The inspection committee comes over, and they find that not only are the things they wanted to be fixed in the first place to be fixed, that other things have gone awry.
Mm-hmm.
So they were extremely hard on the zoo when they did their inspection last March. And although they said that they did not feel that the well-being of the animals was in jeopardy, that it was the financial stability that was a problem. It goes back to their not being particularly pleased with the way the Honolulu Zoological Society is being run. That's another reason that I really want there to be a performance and financial audit on this association.
Let me ask you, in my research and looking at the AZA, is it really, taking one specific point, it's not the health of the animals that are threatened that they saw a problem with, and they indicated that it's managed properly and the animals' welfare is okay, but they don't have financing, and financing is a big part. So at what point will the AZA realize that if you don't have money, they may be fat and dumb and happy today, but tomorrow, if the purse strings tighten up and the mayor diverts that money to the rail or wherever he sends it, then isn't that kind of a love tap rather than, it sounds like what I gather from AZA, the rules are quite loose, and in fact, not that many people are of the facilities that are licensed, right, by the USDA. How many are actually members of the AZA?
Not a whole lot, because a lot of facilities that will receive a representation, a license to exhibit animals, is the USDA APHIS regulations are really pretty minimal.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there are lots of roadside zoos and menageries in shopping centers across the country. Even the Ponaeva Zoo on the Big Island has never applied for, nor I believe will it ever, because it would never meet the regulations of ADA.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
another issue that I think is really important is that, and this is, I've been gathering bits and pieces of information from inside the zoo, from sources which I will not read, but the Zoo Society is talking with the managing director's office and not even including the Kapi'olani Park Preservation Society, which is also a really dumb thing to do, because the Kapi'olani Park Trust has the final say on anything that goes on in anything in Kapi'olani Park.
Mm-hmm.
And to not even include them in their planning is, well, just basic rude, mm-hmm. and then on top of that, leading towards illegal.
Mm-hmm. Now, I alluded to this a bit. And many sources identify this, and I think Pacific Business News also identified it, quoting them, approximately 10% of the 2,400 USDA permit holders are AZA certified. Only 10% out of 2,400. So I get this sensation, go away thinking that the AZA, really, if you try and read the rules and try to figure out what is this all about, and then you look at the USDA, and then you look at the real rules, as you say, the SSP, and in animals are on loan. So Honolulu has 90 animals on loan, right? Of the 870, this is what was identified in some of the readings. So if that's the case, they've been now about closing in, coming near a year that they've lost their accreditation. These animals that are on loan, the facility that loaned those animals to the zoo should demand that they return them, because if they're not AZA certified, which means welfare and no money and what have you, why? But it's up to the individual zoo or the owner of those animals, and it's not mandatory that they return them, even though they don't have the money or they don't have accreditation.
This is true, and I just went over the there have been several new changes in the regulations of ADA, and the preamble has been changed,
mm-hmm.
and if you will allow me, it's only a couple of sentences, but I'd like to read it to you because I think it makes it very clear that the ADA standards are much higher than the APA standards. ADA Zoo and Aquarium standards support the premise of 5 opportunities. These tenets propose that animals, 1, receive nutritionally complete diets that bring out the natural feeding response and behavior. 2, are afforded comfortable living experiences with choice and control to promote mentally and physically healthy behavior. 3, experience good physical health. 4, are provided quality spaces to live in with appropriate social groupings that promote natural species appropriate and motivated behavior. And 5, develop natural coping skills and avoid chronic stress. And this brings us to the sad story of Rosie, the hippo, who died almost 2 years ago. Although the necropsy report would not say it specifically, it did mention that stress from having construction right next to her exhibit could have been a factor, and I believe that it was.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to someone who has seen Rosie. I'm sorry, not Rosie, but
Louise.
Surviving hippo, and that she does have a very nice pool to swim in, and that she is doing quite well. One of the reasons they feel she's doing well in the old elephant enclosure is that she has some privacy. If you remember the exhibit that has been closed temporarily for the past 2 years, there is an underground window, and there are no, the zoo does not have enough staff to monitor every single exhibit. So this one, kids, even with their parents with them, ignoring their bad behavior, do a lot of banging on the glass, and that was considered not the best way of allowing an animal like that to be clean.
Yeah.
There should be something that keeps
that speak to my, my
from banging on the window.
Yeah, that speaks to my concerns with the AZA. It sounds like it's just a paper chase because, first of all, this hippopotamus display that we're discussing is a permanent display, and it has been one that has been inspected. So, unfortunately, that you would have to raise those issues that kids would bang on it, and it's not privacy, but a temporary holding pen is better for that animal. Then, damn it, they should have just shut it down a long time ago. Forget refurbishing it, because if that poses a threat to these animals or to this hippopotamus or to the two of them, then something's really terribly wrong. That this is a substandard display, and the temporary one is almost better because it's secluded and it's sequestered and has privacy, but these are social animals anyway, so to sequester sequester one for any length of time. So I was reading this, and I was taken aback by this roar of a paper tiger. That's what I could go away with. Even if we got AZA and the USDA, for example, I mentioned this earlier, the rules are so loosely written. Even the USDA is at fault. Even the OSHA is at fault, because you got keeper safety, worker safety. You have USDA concerned about the health and welfare of these animals, and they defer. By the way, they rely on the AZA's rules and actions to really guide them. So it's like this guy does very little and very polite and say that we're not worried about the animals' welfare. It looks okay, but they don't have any money to continue to feed them in coming months or years. And that's a big question. And the USDA say, okay, we come and we inspect you. And as you and I discussed earlier, some of the records reflect that the same violations over and over the USDA has tolerated. And the USDA, per Andrew Pereira, the public relations Gestapo, is that there was no real concerns about the hippopotamus and the temporary pond. So I think that the taxpayers and the citizens should be really worried about where do we go from here, because really it's a love fest. If I step back and look at it, the AZA has tolerated many of the things. I try to look at some of the inspections for the temporary pond holding facility. Can't find any reference that it was even inspected. A temporary pond could not be sufficient to satisfy and comply with the standards of enclosure that is required to hold the hippopotamus.
And to go back to your point about social grouping, hippos are very social animals. They live in herds, and Louise hasn't seen another of her kind for almost 2 years, which is goes against one of these five essential important issues brought up in the preamble for the ADA. So I just have I the more I look into this, the worse it looks. Now I also would like to mention, I do not mean in any way that this is a conflict of interest, but I noticed that the members of the Zoological Society members is
Sherry Broder Van Dyke.
Van Dyke. And then we have Jesse Broder Van Dyke, who is a spokesman for the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly what his...
He's a Gestapo gatekeeper for the mayor, lies to on behalf of the mayor, and I'll explain and how confrontational he and Andrew Pereira has been. As you well know firsthand, that I made a request. But go ahead before I get you off track.
I just wanted to mention that it seems... I know that Oahu is a small island, and that, you know, families do end up working from time to in similar situations, but I am so concerned about the whole Zoological Society board, that really raised a red flag for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand and share your concerns, and it raises a red flag for me. But, you know, as you know firsthand, we were there last week, you and I, along with the TV station, and doing a story that aired. And I, as you recall, I initiated a call to the administration to ask if I could personally film and view the temporary enclosure pen, thinking about transparency of the welfare of the animal and let the public see what we have not seen for 2 years and have some explanation as to why and how is it possible that a temporary holding pen was sufficient and complies and has been tolerated by the USDA and everyone. Well, I made that request and they flat out, and this is where it comes into play and I have concerns as you do. It manifests itself into Jesse Broder told me that I could not enter and would not be allowed to photograph that animal or videotape, but they allowed the TV station. But it was my original request, number one. Secondly, he challenged me, as you know and heard firsthand, that I am not media. Yet when I submit requests for information to the city, I'm reminded, because you are media, Mr. Cox, you must submit these papers to the public relations persons. So on one hand, Van Dyke is really acting as a public relations person, but on the other hand, he's serving as an obstructionist. Now, is that where is he getting his strength from and drive to deny the public and participate in this kind of concealment and denial of people having access to see? It's government operation. It's our operations. We have a right. If you allow one TV station to film it, then and upon my request, and then secondly, again, I was reminded by this by Andrew Pereira to say, and let me just let you hear, this is a recent development, and it wouldn't be so difficult if to accept this and to swallow this, but Pereira was recently in media, and I on occasion worked with him and had great respect for him, and when you're in media, you have the trust of the people, and you don't want to see these behaviors, but He writes me back, as a member of the general public, the Department of Enterprise Service will not be granting you access to the temporary hippo holding pen. However, you are welcome to film or photograph any of the public areas at the zoo. The most recent review in July by the USDA pointed out some issues that have been addressed or are in process of being corrected, but did not identify the temporary hippo holding pen as an area of concern. The USDA is the zoo's primary regulator, and agency has no concerns over the quality and conditions of the enclosure in question. How about that?
Well, yeah.
So they have no AZA accreditation, but USDA relies on AZA to its rules and its policies to manage, and they draw from that to guide them and OSHA as well. But yet they have no accreditation, so they don't have a problem with the pen or the zoo. Isn't that funny?
Well, I would like to say that from what I have heard about Dr. Fleming, that he, as a veterinarian and a person who has a great background in animal care, he did a number of things that probably made the city and the zoo society a little miffed. Because he opposed overnights at the zoo. He opposed behind the scenes tours. His primary goal was the well-being of the animals. And the animals like to sleep at night. Most of them are diurnal, and they like to sleep at night. And so we have again this disconnect. The Honolulu Zoo right now is run by a department that wants to get money out of it, rather than understanding that if you're going to have a zoo that is going to be successful, you have to understand that you put money into it. Zoos do not make profit. And until and unless the city decides, and I hope there's somebody down there who's listening and paying attention, and at least I hope our city council people are listening, because this is their issue. This is a bad situation, and it's not going to get any better unless there's an investigation of the Zoo Society and any planning involves the Kapi'olani Park.
But the Kapi'olani Park folks should be raising those issues and not relying on, if it's inconsistent with the agreements, the historical agreements and conditions, then they shouldn't wait until the Lone Ranger comes along and rescue them. They have at their own means of challenging this. And I think that's, like I say, I believe that if you were to ask me, in my simplest description would be, it's a love fest. Everybody presents themselves as being strong and firm on their stance and concerned with the animal behavior and the welfare. And yet the USDA repeatedly, as you know, goes and visits. Here's one, housing facilities. And let me just... The rusted metal and chewed wooden surfaces cited in the previous inspection had been repaired. However, additional areas of rust were noted during the current inspection. Several areas of rust and peeling paint were observed on the doors in the giraffe night quarters. And this was the March 30th, 2015 inspection of USDA. While repairs had been made to the rusted areas cited in the previous inspection report, excessive rust was observed in different non-human primate den areas. Rust was seen in several spaces in chimpanzee den. Patches of peeled paint and rusted metal were observed on both furniture and enclosure walls and doors. The metal had rusted completely through the bottom of the section of metal tubing at the base of one of the chimpanzee doors. Another section of metal tubing was heavily rusted in the baboon den area. Rusted metal may have rough edges that may injure the animals and are difficult to clean. Rust may compromise the integrity of the metal structures. Animal housing should be maintained good repair to protect and contain the animals. So that was just one. I didn't bother to bring the other, the inspection reports. But again, the March, well, last year's inspection of September 2016, there's one out now, correct, that should be due. But they indicate the anesthesia, in earlier inspections, they've said the anesthesia machines were not properly kept, were not calibrated, were not clean. So, you know, something's really bad over there at the zoo. And when they were under AZA, how could all this happen? And when they're under USDA, how could all of this develop if it was not a love fest? Everybody's being polite with one another.
Well, I certainly agree. And just to go back to the Zoo Society bringing in $500K a year, they have 11 employees. You give 10% of that 500K to the zoo. So the rest goes to salaries and administration. They have a free trailer on property. They do not pay rent for that. They have air conditioning provided by the taxpayers. And I think it's about time that this be looked into greatly, because I feel that a nonprofit that claims that it is working for the benefit of the animal and indeed is working for the benefit of its staff is no use.
So let me ask you this. I know we have here in Hawaii and many other places, we have a tendency of gravitating to the individual. And even though it's an institutional process, it's a function of an institution, we tend to be able, with precision, to single out one individual and speak how great they are. And I have just the opposite. I believe that Baird Fleming, if all that is true that is being printed on social media, and I read Denby Fawcett's articles and some other articles, and it suggests that in these articles, and I'm going to, is that Baird Fleming had submitted his application to zoos out of state, right? And that in one instance, he was accepted or had his name on one of the finalists, and he had it removed so because it might become public. That is the allegations. Then secondly, he's going to the Little Rock Zoo or somewhere like that, and so he knew that he was leaving. Now, Baird Fleming is a veterinarian and a good man, as we all, and I'll give him that. But what is it that caused him to walk away and then leaving the general public with a big vote, divesting himself of these responsibilities, while all along telling us that everything's flowing good and we're going to get our accreditation and speaking of that and we're working hard, when he knows he has one foot out of the door? Is he a good man? He's probably the best person you've ever had as a brother, an uncle, a cousin, or a father, or a friend. But in my opinion, in my observations, this is the entire system is broken. And they say $164,000 a year for salary. And this is what we get, a guy who's mute on the transition of him leaving. And we're up in the air about our picking someone new and meeting AZA accreditations and complying. I think the whole thing should be disbanded and turn it into an educational system for children and others and a cultural center and be done with it, because it's going to the animals, man. We're acting like animals, hyenas and cheetahs.
Well, as you know, I've been calling for the closure of the Honolulu Zoo for some time. Mm-hmm. I believe that it is a 42-acre facility. It cannot grow any larger than that. It's bounded by, it's in the middle of the city. I think that that property could be used as botanical garden, as aviaries for endangered forest birds, for people to understand more of the ecology and the flora and fauna of Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the animals should be sent to sanctuaries, and that Honolulu should finally give up on this idea of keeping these animals prisoners, because essentially that's what they are. They are prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
And I think aquariums are fish prisons, too. And not a single one of the facilities in the state of Hawaii that maintain captive animals has accreditation by the American Zoological Association.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing pretty damn awful.
It's going to the it's a zoo out there, I guess, the way we, but there's so many occasions that everyone involved could have been forthright and presenting the public the truth, being transparent. The mayor had no what real reason. We already know the zoo is has problems and its share of problems. And we all know that it's something that always need management, and they're evolving. Zoos evolve. We're not ignorant where we wouldn't understand that. But to just withhold information and then refuse to be open about it and transparent, and I wouldn't be so concerned. I would say just business as usual. But we had a major vote. How would that have influence? And some have already given their opinion on this. It wouldn't have any influence if it was disclosed. But as a voter, I believe that I would like to have been informed. I didn't vote for the constitutional amendment anyway. But as a voter, I would want to know some of these developments that the director of the zoo at $164,000 salary is now 1 foot out of the door and has an agreement to travel to Arkansas and has been hunting for a job for a while. Meantime, if you look at the list, we don't see an application for the reaccreditation. So we got snookered. We got screwed, basically.
Well, I think from a couple of instances where I've interacted with Dr. Fleming, he has been, his hands have been tied by the city. And so when I ask the question, he has to go talk to the people downtown before he can give me an answer.
Mm-hmm.
And for an intelligent person to try to live that way, I think is impossible.
But he's a big man. He's an adult. I mean, I wouldn't. I understand the sympathy and what have you. But as I said earlier, I asked him personally to allow me to film that and look at and take pictures of the conditions of the temporary pond. What did he do? He called the mayor's office. Now, you got the mayor is micromanaging everything. This is, if it's true as he indicated that he represented. Now, he's there at the zoo. I make a request of him. He then has to call the mayor to see if I have I can access the area to photograph it. Does that make sense? He's
no,
a director.
No, it doesn't make sense, but it shows the craziness of having the city run every, as you say, micromanaging all the departments like this.
And here's one thing, and we got a couple of minutes left, but if we all think that now with this new funding coming, here's going to be the really test, the big test. and that is the city council, because in my research and reading, a number of cities have struggled with their city council and the budgets and what have you. Even though the city funds it, the city council intervenes on some, having no knowledge of managing animals other than behaving like animals, you know, has stymied some of the actions or efforts in zoo management around the nation, around the world.
Well, then that just gives me more ammo for my philosophy that zoos are prisons and should be shut down.
Okay.
And I think that people, that when you said that people acting like animals, I think animals behave better than people do when they're in their own environment.
Actually, I'm insulting the animals, because they're more caring than that. They don't connive and lie to you and look at you and say, well, I'm the public relations monkey here, so I'm the head monkey of the Monkeyville, and so therefore I say to you, you're bananas, get out of here. But I'm a citizen. So anyway, it's a jungle out there. And if you want to, you got anything else you want to mention about this? And if so, we'll come back in the next hour. You're welcome to hold on or call right back.
Oh, thank you. I just ask everybody to boycott animal prisons, especially Dolphin Quest and Sea Life Park.
Okay.
They also have a pretty bad history. And sometimes in the future, I'd like to talk about that with you. Thank you so much.
All righty. Well, thank you, Kathy Gogel in Animal Rights Hawaii. Okay. Thank you. Aloha.
The second half of the Carol Cox Show, right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K108. It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show, the second half. And just sitting here plowing through the weeds, trying to see what's happening. Carla, thank you for calling. Go ahead with your comments or question.
Well, hi. Good morning.
Good morning. Carol,
thank you for what you do. I always enjoy and got informed by your programming.
Mm-hmm.
And I see you on television all the time, so I said, okay.
Now, are you inclined to throw a shoe at the television when you see that, or what do you say?
No, I think you're cute. Oh, no, you're a nice guy. You know the recent one about the water?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you're not cute today. I bought to subscribe to the bulletin, but, you know, even media, they're not saying what. Is it in the water, the pink water or the purple water?
Mm-hmm.
Depends on who's reporting, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So what was the chemical? And I saw you on television. I thought you were such a gentleman. I mean, for you to go out there and I shook the hand, you know, with that guy who came and check it out. And I thought you were such a gentleman. You did well. Anyway, so what is it in the water? What was it?
I have no idea. But what I will say is, I mean, I'm thankful that the fisherman who saw that, or when
yeah.
I say the, to bother to call and he called, he observed it on a Monday and called me on a Wednesday, and I went out Wednesday morning right after he called. And the response was well, and you know, the many people have concern, and they've suggested I get my own samples, and because don't trust the state I think I'm going to try to hire a psychologist to listen in on some of these conversations sometimes, and the people that read the articles. I've had some to say, well, Cox says it was in Hawaii Kai. It's nowhere near Hawaii Kai. I don't recall ever seeing a stream there. Well, gee, if I base everything on what I recall, I wouldn't know anything.
Yeah, I know. The reporting is just unreal. And, you know, the previous hour, you
mm-hmm.
were talking about the Pereira.
Mm-hmm.
I knew he was going to be like that. To me, he ended up from day one. And I was sad to see him leave the television.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. I agree with you wholeheartedly, 110% about him at the beginning. But everything now, they're reporting to the mayor. Crying out loud, government, are you folks are paying their bill to do their job. But
mm-hmm.
apparently, they're advertised.
Yeah, but, the it's not painful to everyone should be able to go and work for wherever, whomever they want to. But there's just something about when you respect someone and you see that they do, and then they join this effort, and then they conveniently, without much recruiting, train their barbs on the public and start serving as defectors or serving as obstructionists, serving as that's when it hurts because you.
Yeah.
For me and Pereira, I just thought he was the cat's meow when it came to reporting out. But it's difficult to see then once I'm feeling the tip of the sword from the mayor and I see the behavior
yeah,
that
once.
You follow.
Yeah.
Because it's by choice. It's not some they didn't require him. Maybe there's some new rules in town that says that you, former reporter, you must go work for the mayor who's done everything crooked as barrel of snakes.
Yeah, corruption,
I don't know.
Corruption. It's always like that. Well, anyway, I'm one of those really appreciate your work, and it's so sad that you got the hell of it. You know, the beating and all that stuff, and you don't have cooperation.
Look, you have to use your head sometime in these situations.
You're a tough cookie.
But
tough guy.
But
anyway, I was going to say now, so you don't know what it was in the stream.
No, I do not. But what I will say is that near the street, the Kalani'i Highway, the water was crystal clear. But as you walk towards the street, the ocean, then you will find it to start to turn milky and red, and then as you go closer to the ocean, it was thicker. We did find what seemed to be staining on the cement wall where someone had poured it or introduced it there. But that's where
that's
where
more if you think neighbors, my mom always said, don't do, naughty things, even, digging your, nose and what, because somebody's looking. So do it in the privacy, the kind of thing.
Yeah.
Don't do it in public, but I don't know, this generation, people just don't care or they're not around. I have no idea what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And right after that, I had a news about a fire, and I saw your name,
mm-hmm.
Carol Cox. Did
mm-hmm.
you film? You were there?
I didn't set it.
No, you didn't. I know you didn't set it. It's just in the right place at the right time. I said, wow. Well, was he there? I mean, it's obvious your name was there. Did you just put the name of the...
Yeah. Well, I for some reason, I will say this to you. Over the years, KGMB has been really, Blangiardi and his team, when it comes to the environmental issues, they've never shirked or blew me off. Or, like many of the other stations, they get attitude.
Yeah, I thought what Channel 2 was really, there for you and...
I don't know who cares, but it's their loss. I mean, if it's it's educating the public, right?
Are you saying the KGMB is okay? I mean, they're
let me say this. I have never, I'm still amazed at their willingness and their coverage of and receiving.
Because they're really for the mayor,
Well, yeah, but they might be, but they've never looked at any environmental issue and say, well, we're going
to
pass on that
that's
one because...
Good to hear. Yeah, because I'm telling you, it's so hard.
Because it's good education. When you see this, we would never know, really, that these... And so,
definitely. That's why I'm so thankful. I do appreciate, your programming because a lot of people, they're too busy. They own small businesses and... they just come and going, and they don't keep abreast, and they don't. Even they can go on the internet, but it's mostly Facebook, right? The kind of stuff, but family thing, and I had the opportunity to make a conversation and tell them what's going on, what can you do? They voted him in. I didn't vote.
Talking about media, like the Star Advertiser, they took that story and did front page cover.
Right, so I was thankful for that.
It's an education process, and that's what I think they approach it that way as well, because, again, when it comes to those issues, such as the environment, I've never gotten a cold shoulder from them, ever.
Right, I agree with that. I give them credit for, that's why I subscribe. Because there are good stuff that I need information other than just TV media kind of thing. It's just short and they don't give everything. So at least I have varieties, in the paper. And then I can think for myself, shall we say.
Well, people do eat out of the fish that they catch out of Mauna Loa Bay and they rely on it, some subsistence. And imagine... whatever that material is, being absorbed in the ogo or the plants or other larvae of the fish or some of the fish ingesting it, and then you take it home and eat it, not knowing what it is.
I don't know why people should really appreciate your work, because it wasn't for you. Oh my gosh, could have been worse, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so fun. Anyway, keep up the good work, whatever you can do. I mean, I know your hands are tied a lot of times. So,
yep. But
I feel really sorry for you, but I said, I'm so thankful that you're around.
I don't want to sound like this sometimes you have to call it what it is, and the health department showed up, the cleaning crew showed up. The only thing is that the only drawback is that with Department of Conservation, DLNR, and that is I call them to let them know, the law enforcement branch to let them know that there were dead ducklings and they should be coming to collect
them. Oh, I'm so sad because
And they sent a biologist, but he came with a cage, a carrying cage, to take live ducklings. So, you know, this is the law enforcement. Any other time they to go to a movie or go to a filming of a theater, Suzanne Case has them out there doing that, protecting and killing cats and all, you know, enforcing those kind of laws. But
well,
when it came to dying...
I think they're waiting for a real disaster.
Oh, yeah.
And then they'll move their foot, you know?
But then they
I know you, your prevention. Yeah, I believe in prevention is the key to anything in life, you know?
Now, I believe in using the resources we have. And so
yeah,
when
that's
a,
true too.
An
I
agency...
Mean, that's your job.
It's
okay,
when an agency is there, that agency should respond, and they don't know if...
Right, exactly.
You know?
I agree with you wholeheartedly. By the way, how is Francis?
I haven't spoken with him. I think he's doing okay. In fact, I've been inclined, telling myself I better call him and check. But Francis,
okay,
if you're listening, give us a call. Let us
know. I always think of Francis. You know, I wish him well, and I pray for him that everything will overcome, because I go way back from day one with those guys.
Right.
K108. So
yeah,
okay.
Well,
anyway, I just wanted to know about that.
Well, if we find any more, and if anybody out there know anything about that, give me a call at 782-6627.
I don't know. I depend on you more than you can depend on me.
Okay.
So, okay.
All right. Thank you.
Yes. Thank
Aloha.
You.
All right.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Carla, thank you for waiting. Go ahead with your comments or questions. Caller, thank you for waiting. Go ahead with your comments or questions.
Good morning, Mr. Cox. I know you deal a lot of times with compliance to the law, whether it's environmental or whatever the issue is. But what inspires you, gives you, brings life into you, Mr. Carol Cox?
Oh, my God. Where do I start? Well, just yesterday, sitting there in my home and looking at the sun and the sunset and how magnificent the sky was and the reddish colors and the mountains and the clouds going by. And then I sit there and say, gee, I woke up this morning. I had clouds rolling down the mountain, and I go to bed with a bright, beautiful light, and I want to make sure that tomorrow morning when I wake up, it's there again. I get to see that. It's something similar to that. That's my motivation, and that we need to protect. This is our home. This is the earth, and it's home to many other people and animals and species. So we shouldn't be selfish. So this is just my effort, and some say it's a thankless job, but it people appreciate it. It's just that... people
thank you. Thank
take
you.
Things. So, okay? And a lot more. Thank you so much. Caller, go ahead with your comment or question. Hello? You there?
Hello, Carol?
Yes.
Hi, it's Lynette Harris. How are you today?
I'm fine.
Good. I was calling in regarding the pump for the Malibu gun.
Uh-huh.
The Divine Community Outreach is hosting a concert called a Winter of Praise Concert. It's featuring Bassan Mitchell and Jonathan Nelson. It's happening next Sunday, December 4th, at the Hawaii Theater.
Okay.
At 5 p.m. So please invite the listeners.
So that's
going to be a wonderful worship experience.
A Winter of Praise and Gospel concert, Sunday,
yes.
Sunday the 4th of December, 2016. Location, Hawaii Theater. 1130 Bethel Street, and the star of the show, the two featured guests or artists, is Vashon Mitchell and Jonathan Nelson. Tickets can be purchased at what online on HawaiiTheater.com/tickets or the box office. And who else will be there with him, with those two gentlemen?
It's going to be praise dancers, and it's going to be a mass choir,
okay.
Directed by Brother Drew Halsey. So that's going to be a choir about 50 people. So it's going to be a wonderful, wonderful time.
All right, then. Well, December 4th, not far away.
Not far away. Just next week. Let's get tickets today.
Well, okay. Well, thank you. And maybe we'll get a... find the music before the next show or they show up. That's going to be on a Sunday. It might be the morning that we be playing. So if you got a couple tunes, that we can, I'll be happy to play some of that good old sanctified religious music. I don't laugh. I was raised on that, man. That's where you it make you feel good when you got a toothache, right? When you're hungry and cold, put a little gospel on it. It'll make you feel good. So
definitely.
Alrighty. Thank
always
you, Linda.
Good news. Gospel is always good news.
Alrighty. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol.
Okay.
Bye bye.
All right. Again, that's a Winter of Praise gospel concert, Sunday, 4th, December 2016, location Hawaii Theater. And I don't know about you, but Mahalia Jackson and all of those good people that sing gospel, and it's there was not. I used to look forward to going to church on Sunday in the rural area. They're driving down, getting ready to. You're putting the lard on your hair and shining your baby oil. And, man, you look like a new nickel, man, when you're getting ready for church. And you get to church, and there was Miss Carrie Guy, who you would, she's a predecessor to Whitney Houston, who would sing, and you'd be stuck in your seat because you just wanted to hear more. And many like that. And this was before microphones, and you, if someone showed up with a microphone, you go, what is that? But it would fill the church, and would be on these rural roads, and just really awesome. And that, not from a religious standpoint, but the spiritual aspect of it, it really makes you feel good, wants to make your blood move in the right direction. So I remember those days, and running out and playing on the church grounds, and you know, so yeah, and staying away and listening from a distance, and you hear that music, you ought to join in, guys. Anyway, this thing with this purple water was is an example of what we need to be mindful of, and again. You would think that, well, what was it? Well, the only person knows really conclusively at this point is that the person that either accidentally dumped it or introduced or for inadvertently left it in the ditch or however, they are the ones that really know. And so when the state comes along and sample, and they have to know because they need to dispose of it. And some 6,000, estimated 6,000 gallons of that material, water mix, was extracted from that in PENCO Environmental Corporation, Pacific Environmental Corporation, or PENCO, brought out giant vacuum trucks and sucked it up. But again, if it had gotten in the bay, who knows? It may be harmless, but that's not, we don't need to take guesses So if you have paint, lacquers or thinners, or if you're doing a job and the job requires you to use sprayers and brushes and rollers and paint pans, just take them back home with you and dry them out. Don't purge your leftover paints that are in the sprayers and pipes and what have you and pump it into the water in the stream, because you may not see the impact or the effects on animals or other plants or what have you, or fish or aquatic species in that. Like, this is, the stream itself is impeded, you know, from the ocean, a big berm, and we've done shows about the lack of cleanliness and maintenance of these streams, and these streams, when they clog up and they don't flow directly to the ocean unobstructed, upstream you might find some flooding. So it's beneficial to actually do maintenance on these streams, and the discussion is that a state stream or a city stream? And that's the comedy of it, this entire process. You would think that by now any and everybody would be on abreast of this. They'd know who owns which stream, and because if it becomes a question as to who owns it, well, then maybe we need to go around and put a template or etch it in the cement. City owns this portion. State owns this portion. The feds own this portion. But they hadn't figured that one out. So maybe next time they lay cement, they could go out there and paint it on. Or but it's rather humorous because, and that's, what do you tax? Who do you draw the money from? Do you look for the city to bear the cost? I mean, at the end of the day, it's the same taxpayer, but these are bureaucratic processes. And so, but one of the things that did come to my mind, seeing that the purple material was already being addressed and extracted, I was horrified when you look at the conditions of the water in some of the stream and one adjoining stream that lay parallel. The water is black and nasty and smelly from detritus or eutrophication, the rotting of plants. But what got me alarmed was the amount of wigglies in there, the little mosquitoes. And you're talking about a breeding ground, and you could see thousands of them just wiggling in the larvae. So I left there thinking, okay, they're going to clean that up. But this is a haven for mosquitoes. And so you would think we would be aggressively cleaning those out and making sure that they flow straight out and have not stagnating. So I think that one environmental problem reveals another in this instance. And what I would like to share with you that I find to be really problematic and commonplace is that is people that live next to streams or their property, the stream borders their property, they have a tendency to dump their leaf cuttings and there's trees and limbs and whatever. Now, while that may save you time and what have you, it's unsightly, but it also creates stagnant areas. And so when that is rotting and what have you, you're presenting a problem to that community, and you're lucky if as storms build, they wash down. All of that material got to go somewhere. And it comes down and find a restricted point, and all that build up, the limbs and the leaves and the grass and the soil and dirt, and the next thing you know, this community is flooded. So be mindful of that, folks. It's something that you need to take care of and avoid that. Because, everybody repeat after me, this is our home, and we don't have another home. And if we did, we don't have a taxi cab big enough to take us off to the universe where we can abandon this one. So some of us are out of luck. Good morning. Go ahead with your comments, question, caller.
Thank you very much for taking my call. You're very, very faint, but I shall continue. Talking about the zoo, I'm very familiar with, let's say, a person who has been has poverty, let me put it that way. And he often goes to the zoo to watch the orangutans and comes back and talks about it often. And what's happening at the zoo is not deplorable, it's disgusting. You, Mr. Cox, often you expose problems, you provide empirical evidence, you provide the source who is resolved, who is the problem, and you identify who they are. And there are excellent audits. They find the problems. They publicize the problems. There's no enforcement. And it ends there. And I guess I want to say it's up to the people. I don't know any other solution. I'm not sure if you can go through the power of the elected officials. I do not think they act on behalf of the public.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me share with you how unsophisticated I am in my thinking. I believe that one of the dumbest things that I see in this state that happens, and this is me speaking now, is that an audit is warranted, an audit is conducted, it's funded, and then in turn it comes up with its findings. But there's a unique process here. You then go back to the city or the state or the entity you're auditing, and then you give them courtesy to review what it is that you're going to say about them, and they get to object and what have you in 2-3 weeks. So the audit is complete, basically, but then they introduce this element. And then so when we see the audit, they've already put their spin on it. They've already gone to the media, and they've prepared themselves to fend off any real scrutiny. So I think, and this might speak to my lack of sophistication in management and government, but I think it's the dumbest thing, and it's defrauding the public. When an audit is done, you either know how to audit, your audit is accurate, and what have you, and don't be writing them back. What do you think? How would you like to say? Basically, it's saying, well, we got the goods on you, but you got 2 weeks to come up and put a pretty face on it, because you know this is the public is we're doing this for, and it's their money. But have a you follow.
Oh, I do, and that's why it has to be a forensic audit, and the audits that have been done by the city on the rail and on the paratransit, they're not forensic. So when you have a forensic audit, it means consequences by law.
Right.
And that there has to be enactment. And there is no enactment. I have to stand up for the auditors. I have all the different audits original. And they come up with the conclusions, but there is no change, because they're not, that's not their responsibility.
Yeah, well, see, in many cases, thank you for mentioning that. I can always depend on you defending someone in this process, but it's an institution. It's not necessary to defend any of them. They get paid. We're respectful of them, and that should be enough. We shouldn't have to chew their food for them and then relieve themselves. We do that for them. They're big boys and girls, and so when they submit their findings to the target of the audit, then I believe that they should not be releasing anything to anyone until it's finalized from their standpoint, and then at the same time give public access to it, because we get duped, we get sold down the river because they've had time to put a spin on it.
Yes.
You follow? And that just suggests to me that that is not a clean hand.
They have a proposal before the city council months ago for the Ethics Commission to have an audit or to investigate the auditor. And they came to the conclusion, and Mr. Young, the auditor, said, we are too close. Our relationship is such that you need an independent auditor to investigate. And it's by Mr. Young's own admission. Mm-hmm. And you're absolutely right about institutionalized and about the micromanaging of the mayor and how everything goes back to the mayor, and the mayor makes the final decision on behalf of the mayor and everybody who supports him. I just want to thank you so much, Mr. Cox. It's absolutely essential that you use your intellect, emotion, imagination, and intuition to help all of us out here. Thank you, Mr. Cox.
All righty. Thank you. And I also do it for the animals. But anyway, just that the audit process, many of the checks and balances in this state are missing. There tend to be more checks than balances, and I don't mean checking up on a person in scrutiny. I mean checks as in dollar amounts, and that's the danger. And some of you believe that we can't get control over it. You can, and we will, but eventually, and it's going to cost people their jobs. It's going to cost people their friendships. But at some point, you wait. There's a thing called carrying capacity or tolerance, and so there's only so much to be had out there. There's only so much tax dollars to be taken from you. And that's just not me interpreting that. That's the reality. So what's going to happen? What's going to happen is that there's going to be a tense moment and it's going to break. You know, you're going to see a greater number of people on the street, or people struggling. And the ones that are in government, you know, I believe that we should take and review and a number of these boards and commissions. I think we have overstayed our welcome with these. Many of them are just advisory, and they get to fix it, refix it, reshape it, and basically, how did the public accept that? Well, let's just drop something out there and run it by them. They won't know. We'll just do a little test. And you get a lot of that activity. And that's more palatable. Let them digest it for a bit. How did the public receive that? Oh, we got glowing reviews. Okay, let's go with that. That being nothing that's good for the total population or the benefit, but for special interest. So that's the way this is. And there was a couple of callers that missed out, and they hung up. But you can call back 524-1080. You're welcome to call whatever you have comments on. But bring to your attention over there at Sand Island, by the Marine Sanctuary, the Sand Island, right near where the homeless shelters are, the temporary homeless shelters, and the kayak and canoeing. Now, folks, if you up to it and got nothing to do and want to play Dick Tracy and just go out being a citizen inspector, go out to the boat harbor, the launch ramp there at Sand Island. This is as you go over the bridge at Sand Island. You make that right and go in there where all the canoes are. And I want you to look at the conditions of the sidewalks, the walls, the launch ramps. Now, you know, people buy boats, and they have real nice boats and jet skis and watercrafts and all. And then there's tires or buoys along the launch ramp that protect you from scratching or scouring or breaking your boat. Now, I'm going to post some pictures up on carolcox.com. And you tell me, this not much of a cost to repair this, but you won't believe your eyes. There are tires, and you know tires come cheap. You can drive by the bushes anywhere and you'll find yourself 50, 60, 70 tires, and so you could have tires, you know. State workers could take the lunch break and go collect tires and come back and take a drill and cordless drill and stand there and grind and take bolts out and replace those tires. But folks, the anchor, the cleats that you tie your rope to, your bolts you tie off, let me tell you, if you touch them, they will fall. They're brittle, many of them, and the metal just falls off. They've been exposed, and no maintenance, no care. And then you look at the tires, they're torn, and then you have metal and just rust and what have you. But if you get past that and you're not sickened by the sight of it and how simple it could be repaired and replaced, then take a little gander to the little jaunt to the north along the sidewalk, and you'll see rebar 3-4 inches sticking out on the sidewalk from the wall. The wall has collapsed, falling apart, and all of that. And then be careful now, because there's one spot with the metal rod that is supposed to be flattened and laying across the sidewalk, but instead it's raised about 12 to 14 inches. And so a person unknowingly walks over that and bam, break a leg, fall. God forbid if they fall on a piece of the rebar that's sticking out. But you got to see this. And this is when you turn and ask yourself, why do we need government in such large fashion, overflowing the offices, and you can't, you want to go and see the government, you can't even find a parking space to go do government business. But the, it's filled with private cars of the government workers. So you want to go there and talk to them about the broken sidewalks. Good luck. Better bring a lot of quarters, or you better walk or have someone drop you off. And hopefully you find somebody in the office. But Suzanne Case, and under this gentleman that can't think of his name now, I'll think of it as we go. But the boating and recreation harbors, this is horrendous. You got to see it, and you won't believe that some of these things are the height of, at the eye level of little children that come and walk and visit that area. And these jagged pieces of rusty spears, so to be, just sticking out. So if you are there walking in the nighttime, you're subjecting yourself. If you sit on the wall, you'll likely get stabbed or punctured. And you would think there would be, and this has been like this for a couple years now, but no importance, you see. Nothing is of importance but to hoodwink and dupe the public on issues that they want. Oh, we want to kill all the cats. Well, okay, we'll kill all the cats. Well, what can you... if you're killing all the cats and that's your focus, can you not kill us through by stabbing us to death with these, you know, pieces of wrought iron and rebar sticking out and exposed and broken bricks and cement and what have you? And some of this rust is so bad that it looks like if you stick yourself, you're likely to drop dead right there. Don't wait. You won't need to wait for the infection. It's that bad, folks. And it's an embarrassment. People are going to use these areas, and these areas, they're going to show wear and tear and some abuse and what have you. But this is a place where many of people are attracted. Thousands per week are attracted to this area. And they shouldn't be exposed to these hazards. Period. Shouldn't be. And so, again, do we get our money's worth for government? No. And that's the real problem with this. And I want you to look at it. And if you're down there, just take a look and see if you could get by. If you were a manager at a business or what have you, or at an apartment building, and you look at that and see if you could get by with that, and how long it will take before someone sue you. Thank you, caller, for calling. Go ahead with your comments or questions.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning, sir.
How's your day been?
Man, I've been having a good time.
All right. How was your turkey dinner?
It was all right. I made soup, man. I give the turkey a break, hopefully. I didn't want to get too... but, you know, unfortunately, I was... it was good.
One less turkey that you... Somebody ate.
Yeah, it was a great day, and felt like we were getting somewhere. You know, the one thing about the people tend to put the abrasive approach to things, their strategies aside for the day, right?
Yeah.
Don't help the turkey, but or the ham, but
well,
anyway.
Give thanks and praise that we're still standing. That's all I can say. About this thing down at the boat dock?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? That's a state property?
Right, on the DLNR.
I just like to go down there in the nighttime and accidentally trip and put a nice little gouge in my hand or something, you know what I mean? Just to, you know, wake them up, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but you might not be... These are some serious daggers, man. You might...
if he contrived, you know, just to notify these people that they have a situation that is life-threatening.
Oh, yeah. But
it doesn't make any sense.
But I think if they found a way and forming a non-profit organization to take care of it, they'd find money for it.
Yeah.
You know, that's the trend now, right? You're in government and it's broken, so call your friends up and say, hey, you know, you should open up a
cash in on this one.
A non-profit organization called Pokey Things and People, you know, and get it an LLC and a non-profit, and then we'll get you a grant to go over there and look at it.
And then, right off, and
and then you handle the contractor.
I tell you, this day and age we live in doesn't make any sense anymore.
It will soon, because we won't have any dollars and cents.
Yeah.
It'll be gone.
The Treasury is so far behind. You know what I mean? They tell us we still have money in the state, but that only accounts for people keep giving them money.
Mm-hmm.
If we slow down on the taxes and stuff, we'll be in big trouble.
Yeah. I mean, imagine in a world where a governor stands up and says, we have an extra $1 billion. Yeah, but we also have everything going to hell in the handbasket over here, falling apart. What you going to do with that, boo? That $1 billion.
Yeah, $1 billion wouldn't even cover half of the problems we got.
I mean, honestly, you see, this is the danger of education. You can go and educate people, and then you can let them serve as senators and legislators, but something's missing along the way. I would be embarrassed to boast that we have extra when all of these things, infrastructure and many other issues that should be addressed with this $1 billion, but we have a surplus.
Yeah. Who directs him how we're going to spend that?
Well, each agency head has their task and their responsibilities and you know,
so budget, you mean.
And they're supposed to be managing, and their people in the field are supposed to be looking at it, and their maintenance people, and it works up, and so they come in with the worksheet. I was out at the harbor, and this is what I observed. Here are the pictures. It poses a threat to people's boats and properties and their health, so we need to do something. And then he, in turn, looks at his budget and said, okay, we do this, this, and this. And then maybe there's some urgency in some of these situations that need to be addressed now, right? Because it leaves the city or the state vulnerable to legal action, or forget the legal action, just harm to citizens, right?
Yeah.
So you would think that then in there, Suzanne Case would tell her man, well, got to get it fixed.
Don't mention her name.
Yeah.
She's a real failure. What is that? DNLR, yeah? She's ahead of
them. Mm-hmm.
This governor, he came into office with glowing, you know, predictions about what he's going to do and stuff. And he's been a failure.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, I'll never vote for him again.
Well.
It all depends on who we have running against him.
Mm-hmm.
Dog catcher and the governor. I think the dog catcher, man, at least he has a little empathy for the animals, you know what I mean? But this guy, he's what, an engineer, yeah? Yeah, he should have stayed building bridges.
Yeah, well, bridges had a great problem, too, remember now.
these things are, these bridges are all crumbling.
Yeah.
They're all built in 38, you know what I mean? They're like almost 100 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're way behind the curve.
Yeah, and you know, this Marine Center sits over there through the college there, and this area beckons to a lot of boaters. And you would think, and this is a simple ramp. I mean, it won't take that much, right, for upkeep.
Yeah, just make it wider and longer.
You don't have to touch it. It is perfect.
Okay.
It's perfect. It's just that they've let it grow into shambles, deteriorate.
Yeah.
It's the best example of government not recognizing that rust never sleeps.
Yeah, well, these people are anything by the ocean has a half a lifetime if you're inshore.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So if they don't equate that in their, you know, equation to repair or resurface or whatever it takes, they got the wrong guys working for us.
Yeah. And if you go throughout the state, I've gone on the Kauai and observed and found horrible conditions at certain boat harbors there. And you would think that if a person has his boat and he waxes it and cleans it, they don't want to poke a hole in it and while launching it.
That really make your day. You know, people. You know what I mean? Without their boat, man, they're in trouble.
Yeah. And but I mean, you could come along unsuspectingly. They got big bolts, man, big metal bolts sticking out. They used to hold the tires, and now the tires are gone, and the bolts are just there. So if you rub along there, and I know some guy will call up and say, well, they should use bumpers. Well, that's true, too. They should, but one guy didn't.
No, a pier is supposed to be maintained where they have all them bumpers already on there, and they're upgraded all the time.
Right.
The people that pay for a license for the boat and, you know, the registration, I guess they don't care. I don't hear nobody calling your program and say, yeah, man, that situation down there needs ASP.
Right.
And if not, fire who's, you know, not doing it.
Right. Well, you know, this area, too, serves as an emergency launch ramp, right? Let's say
for rescue.
I mean, we're right under the airport takeoff zone. There are many people that recreate out there, or there's boats having the fire department go out on alerts and to assemble there and launch their boats. I mean, it's like, wait now. There's so many things of greater importance than keeping the money in and boasting you have $1 billion.
Yeah, and you can't spend it on necessities that are right in front of your face.
Right. Yeah. And I know I'm some of you might say that's a mountain out of a molehill, and I'm saying no.
If you get poked, it ain't no molehill. You know when you got poked, it was a rebar that has like, you know, a lot of rust on it. Yeah, okay. There's an infection right down the road.
Yeah, and I mean this is in some of the eye level to some of the children that you see walking through there, and people can get it jabbed in their knees or in their thigh. I mean it's that bad.
Is that a homeless area, like you said?
Well, no, it's the homeless do go there and congregate. The homeless, the shelter is there, but there are some people that are homeless. But
I'm just saying, in the middle of the night, they get up and start walking around, and you know, you run into one of them things.
Or let's just say you walk down there and you're fishing. You can fish from the rocks, right?
Oh, okay.
And you go to step over there, and there's this really sharp 4 or 5 inch piece of rebar just laying there waiting to poke someone.
Yeah. I wish we had better things to talk about, but if this thing is, you know, right there in front of our face, somebody ought to do something. You know? Just cut them off. Saw and just whack them all off, pick up the pieces, and, you know, throw them in the dump.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. But you can't do that. It's bad, man. It's something
Well, I haven't seen it, but, you know, I can imagine you ain't talking no BS because you're not into that game. You know what I mean?
No, there's enough of that out there if you want to grow orchids.
Well, I hope you had a happy Thanksgiving, man, and the holidays are good for you, and watch out for the other guy on the road especially.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there are a lot of drunk drivers out there, man. They don't care about nobody else.
Can you imagine drinking so much and you feel so good, and then all you got to say is you mangle people and wipe them out, and then say, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Sorry don't count in my book, man, when you take somebody else's life.
You know, it's like,
you're responsible. Manslaughter.
Drink responsible and drink and stay at home if you're going to drink.
You have somebody else drive. You know what I mean? If you know you're going to get, you know, incapacitated, you got to take care of your business.
Yeah, I see guys, you know, it's just, it's crazy. I mean, when you consider all the activities on the, and these are close quarters, and the streets overwhelmed with number of cars anyway, and then you add a problem to it by drinking.
Yeah, I think in the last year we've had about 4 or 5 police officers that have been caught drunk driving and stuff, haven't it?
Mm-hmm.
This year is a bad year for catching police drinking and driving.
Well, some say that if you had to work for this mayor, you'd drink too. And do a little cocaine, because you find yourself having
echelon. They got to have money to do that drug.
But I mean, you know, you try working for a guy who he tell you one thing, and then but you really learn that everything, and then he wants to fire the chief, but tell the chief to resign because Well, he hadn't been found guilty of anything, but he's under investigation, and he gets to say, well, I got my $200,000, and I'm living fat-free.
Right? The police chief, but...
Wouldn't that drive you to drink?
He's got to have some punishment come down.
I mean, here you are upholding the law and taking people to jail for silly things, and then the mayor can steal, rob, and cheat, and all you got to do is stay your distance. That would drive me to drinking and driving, too, man.
Yeah. Well, what are we going to do today? It's like a headache with reading the newspaper, because it's one problem after another that's not solved.
People need to get involved. That's about all I can tell you. And if they don't get involved, just look for more.
Well, I try to. I vote, and I do have a couple associations that I deal with, but I think we're just in a quagmire.
We can fix it. We've been worse.
Well, I try to be positive.
Yeah, we can fix it. Well, anyway, we're down to the last minutes, and we'll talk to you.
Take care.
Aloha. Thank you.
See you next week or so. Hey, take care, football.
All right. This is the Carol Cox Show, and thank you for joining me, and we'll be back next week. Aloha.
Don't you give your love to sexy Ida, 'cause she is the sister of a black widow spider. And if you give her your love, you might as well give it to the spider. Let me tell you, she's got long black hair, hangs way down her back, long black pretty legs. She walks just like a cat. Your body tied on the back of a love sack. She wants your love and has your life after that. So don't give your love into mine. Oh, stop, if you want to go to Ida. She looks so sweet and tight. Oh, she's a sleeping. Oh, no love. Working eyes on your love. Don't give her love to Ida. Oh, if you give her your love, you might as well give it to her.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu. Pub and Pizza.